Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Hi, everybody. Happy New Year, and welcome to Two of the First for today, January the 4th, 2023. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Good to have you with us. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. We have a couple of topics for you, as the name of the show implies. Welcome to the new year. We have not done a show to start the year yet. My kids actually had off until Tuesday, and then yesterday, things just kind of got out of control. So wanted to start the week off fresh and start the year off fresh with a good episode. Didn't want to just kind of jam it down your throat. So, two topics for today, one PGA Tour related, one not PGA Tour related whatsoever, and still very exciting unto itself. So let's start with the PGA Tour. We've kicked off the year now with the Century Tournament of Champions that starts tomorrow, Kapalua Resort Plantation Course on Maui in Hawaii, primetime golf to start the year. Very, very excited about all of that. This is one of my favorite tournaments of the year to watch for a couple of different reasons. One, it's a small field. And typically, I don't love the small field stuff, but I kind of like the intimacy of one of these types of things per year. I don't necessarily love that the PGA Tour expanded the criteria to get into the event to allow players who qualified for the Tour Championship but didn't win a tournament to get in. I wish this were still a winners-only event. However, this is now an elevated event, and we've been over what the concept of elevated events are. We'll probably talk about it even more in the weeks and months to come. However, this tournament now has a $15 million purse, basically doubled from last year. It was $8.2 million last year. It's $15 million this year, $2.7 million to the champion. That is a lot of money. And I think that the PGA Tour wanted to give some kind of boost to players who qualify for the Tour Championship, because that means, one, you played a great season. Second, you played probably a fair amount of golf, so you're being rewarded for being loyal to the tour by playing the schedule. And I think they wanted to ensure that players who are stars or breakout names, particularly those that might be in that PIP top 20, the Player Impact Program top 20, that earn money based on their popularity but didn't win, had a chance to get into a tournament like this. So that's why we've got this expanded criteria. I think a lot of it really has to do with the Player Impact Program and the group of 20 that commit to playing in all of these tournaments if they're able and eligible, with the exception of having one you can turn down. Rory McIlroy made this one his, and that you can exchange an event for another. So we'll get to that a little bit later on in this first half of the show, but there are opportunities for players to say, hey, maybe I don't want to play this event, but I do want to play this event in exchange. That's a kind of a make good. And so there's that opportunity there as well. However, we've still got a great field. We've got 17 of the world top 20, even though the world number one is not here. You've got a 39-player field, so just about the right number, basically the same number as last year. And you've got a great golf course, which is a lot of fun to watch on TV. The Cork Crenshaw design from 30 years ago, basically, still holds up really well. They've expanded it. They've lengthened it. They've changed some things about the golf course over the years. But by and large, it is the product that was originally introduced. The setting is gorgeous. The playing corridors are huge, at least in concept. It pays to be a bomber. The greens are big. The greens are a little bit slower. They're a little bit grainier, so they're tricky because they're Bermuda. There's a lot going on this golf course that, even though it looks like wall-to-wall fairway and that it's really, really easy, it's not as easy as it looks. And part of that is the deception of it being a par 73 golf course. I mean, that gives you an extra four strokes against par. Obviously, that's not a big deal when 34 under par was the winning score last year and 33 under second place. However, most years you're looking at somewhere in the mid-20s, high 20s. I could see it approaching 30 again this year. However, if you're looking at that range and you take away those four strokes, 26, 27 under par, still easy, but maybe a little bit deceptive. And then you look at the golf course itself and the way it kind of structures itself. The front nine has a lot of long par fours. The back nine has a bunch of short par fours under 400 yards for these players. All the par fives are gettable. A lot of the par fours that are even longer than 399 yards are gettable, if not reachable in some cases, for the long hitter. So it pays to be a long hitter. Doesn't necessarily pay to be the most accurate hitter at this golf course, but it tends to prove that the cream rises to the top. You tend to get a winner that is one of the higher favorites, if not the favorite, to win the tournament. And I think that's all a great setup for what should be a very, very good year for golf. Now, we did mention this is an elevated event, and there has been some natural concern about players perhaps abandoning events that are no longer elevated tournaments because they've agreed to play in a lot of events that they would probably play in anyhow, but now they don't really have to play in, and they probably don't have to feel bad about playing in other events. But the question was, with this kind of arrangement to play 17 to 20 events, would these players walk away from those events that don't have $15, $20, $25 million purses? Would they not be interested in playing in those tournaments, knowing that the money they have available and that they satisfy that PIP requirement? They're going to get paid on the PIP. They're probably going to get into the playoffs and tour championship. They're going to have access to all the big money tournaments. So what's the reason to go play all the non-elevated events? We still haven't come up with a good word. The ground floor events, I don't know what to call them. But we don't know, and we didn't know what that response is. But now, several weeks into December, we had a good idea of maybe what was starting to take shape, and now we definitely have a good idea because we have a sense of the commitments, the early commitments to a couple of the tournaments in the California swing that come up right after we get done here in Hawaii over the next couple of weeks. And if you look at the American Express, which is the first tournament on mainland American soil, this tournament typically struggles to draw top names, and that's in part because it doesn't have a big purse. The other is the format. You're playing on three courses. You have amateur players every day. Some of that stuff just pros don't like dealing with, some pros. And some just want to rest. They don't want to take on that tournament because then you've got some others that are highly valuable in this California and Arizona swing because you're throwing in the Phoenix Open, which is an elevated event this year. But then you've got Pebble Beach, you've got Torrey, you've got Riviera. How do you pick? That all said, if you look at the early commits, the headlines for the American Express, you've got John Rahm, who plays this tournament year in and out, Will Zalatoris, Sam Burns, Tom Kim. You've got four-star players right there ready to go. We'll see how many top 50 players you get in the end, but you're probably going to wind up getting, I don't know, 12, 13. That's good for the tournament, which increased its prize money, I believe, to $8 million this year. Then you look at Torrey Pines, another tournament I was worried might have a lot of problems moving forward. Because one, they have moved it to a Saturday finish. And two, Torrey's hard. Torrey South is not an easy golf course. So if you wanted to test yourself, you want to go play there. If you don't like dealing with long rounds and maybe the traffic in the area or whatever, getting around, maybe you skip this one now that it's not up there and considered one of those events that's kind of like the unofficial start of the year. Well, look at the early player commitments. You got John Rahm, Xander Schauffele, Will Zalatoris, Colin Morikawa, Tony Finau, Max Homa, Hideki Matsuyama. You're going to get more. You're going to get probably 17 to 20 of the top 50 that are going to compete. These events are okay. At least so far, that's not bad. Now, do I think the tournaments that are going to suffer the most are going to be toward the back end of the schedule? Yeah. Like once we get to the part of the year where you're kind of struggling to deal with the 3M Opens of the world, the Wyndham Championships of the world, Rocket Mortgage Classics of the world. I don't think there's really anything you can do to fix those other than making them elevated events for 1 year at a time. And that's unfortunate, but it sounds like there are guys who have maybe decided the cadence that they've always had for this part of the year is more or less going to stay the same. And maybe if you skipped Phoenix in the past, you're going to go play Phoenix because it's $20 million. But everyone played Riv. That didn't change. So that's not going to change because it's an elevated event. I think the Pebble Beach event still has some trouble with it, and we'll see what happens there. If the tour can do something to kind of entice players to go play that event, that would probably be great for the West Coast swing, but it has suffered in the last several years. We'll see a better picture of this in the coming weeks to come, but I think that we have a better idea now that this isn't just going to be a total change in schedule to elevated events with great fields, and then everything else that's not so great, and then the three or four events that you know on the regular schedule are not going to be very good, and then the opposite field events that are just atrocious. I don't think it's quite that stark. And so I think that's a good sign for the PGA Tour. And hopefully whatever marketing messaging to players they have done about trying to create some kind of continuity week to week from stars playing is hanging on regardless of the amount of money that they now have available to them through the elevated tournaments. Okay, second story for this week's Wednesday episode is that there's going to be a new golf course at Pinehurst. And there have been rumors out there. There had been conversation out there that this was potentially happening. The Pinehurst Resort shared a video a couple days ago that I saw on social media. And it was kind of one of those videos that you produce for like Instagram or Twitter where it's just a bunch of images together and some music. I mean, it was basically a reel style video. And in the video is Tom Doak talking. Now, if you don't know who Tom Doak is, Tom Doak is a golf architect, very well-known golf architect. He's done some tremendous courses around the world. A fantastic, fantastic vision for what a property can look like and what it can mean as a golf course. And so kind of putting one on one together, you got 10 because you figured, okay, Doak's doing something at Pinehurst. We don't know exactly what that is, but he's doing something. And I tweeted, well, is it Tom Doak time at Pinehurst? Of course, Pinehurst didn't respond. They want to tell you on your own schedule or their schedule. And then Matt Ginella with Fire Pit Collective kind of put it out there. Again, trying to put the pieces together and said, Pinehurst owns several hundred acres, like 400 acres of land in the town of Aberdeen, which is just outside of the village of Pinehurst, just a little south of the area. Maybe they're doing something with that. Well, that's what they're doing. So Pinehurst number 10 is coming. The announcement was made today. The property is located 4 miles south of the main resort clubhouse. So if you've ever been to Pinehurst or never been to Pinehurst, there's a main clubhouse for several of the courses. 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all kind of in one spot. And then there's some other side clubhouses for 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. They're all kind of out on their own a little bit. Well, now we're going to have number 10, which is... it's going to be amazing. I mean, they haven't named it number 10, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be number 10. I'd be kind of surprised they don't name it number 10. They haven't given the official name yet, but the work on the golf course will be completed just before the 2024 U.S. Open, which will be played at Pinehurst number 2. So this is going to be the property's first golf course since 1996. That's pretty big news. And then you're going to have a golf course really that is going to sound, from the sounds of things, based on what Doak is saying, that's going to be quite different than what you might expect from Pinehurst if you've ever played down there. If you've never played down there, you should go. Just go to Pinehurst at some point in your life if you're an avid golfer. You don't have to play number 2. It's a very expensive round. It's like $500, $600. And I understand that's a budget buster for pretty much everybody on the planet. But you can go play number 4. Number 3 is an absolute blast. You can go play the Cradle all day and have so much fun. Number 8's really good, just got redone. Number 6, I believe, is now hosting the U.S. Adaptive Open. It's a different take on a Pinehurst course. It's lovely. And then you've got everything that's going on in the town right next door in Southern Pines. You've got Southern Pines, which is now owned by the folks who own Mid Pines. And Peggy Kirk Bell's family is that kind of group of people. And they own Southern Pines, which, I mean... Pine Needles as well. It's just a phenomenal place to go play golf. And those are just the high name places. Then you start to think about Tobacco Row, which is a little outside of town. It's just a great place to be. If you can do it even once in your life, go do it. And if you decide to do it in 2024 instead of 2023, once you get to late spring, hey, guess what? You have another course to play from Doak, who says that the site that they're working off of is, quote, topographically distinct and drastically different from anywhere in Pinehurst. It's bigger, bolder, and more dramatic. There's about 75 feet of elevation change, and we'll work our way up to it around the midpoint of the layout. You'll have expansive views from this apex over the rest of the course. It will be an unforgettable experience. And there are some pictures out there that we'll put up that you can kind of get a sense that there's plenty of water in play. Obviously, there's a lot of pines, Pinehurst. You know, you get the gist, right? But you're going to have some pretty significant elevation change on the golf course, which is pretty cool. You see some of that in Southern Pines. You see some elevation change that's pretty significant in my mind. Maybe not quite 75 feet, maybe closer to 50, but it really does stand out. Makes the place look spectacular. So that's really, really cool. And it kind of comes full circle for Doak, who first started visiting Pinehurst 40 years ago. And he did this very famous series of books called The Confidential Guide to Golf Courses, where he went around and rated golf courses, famous around the world on his own scale and whether they're good or bad and reasons why. Well, he gave number two a perfect 10. And that was, that's rare. That's very rare. And a guy that ultimately supported the restoration of the course in 2010 by Coren Crenshaw, which was seen as controversial at the time. People thought, why are you messing up this incredible golf course that's hosted the U.S. Open a couple of different times? And Pinehurst said, look, we need to change things up. We need to get things back to the way they were, not to what Pinehurst has become. We want to be back to what's what we have been. And I think that golf course and that renovation was extremely, restoration was extremely important to golf course architecture for a pop from a popular standpoint. It popularized the idea of kind of reintegrating contrasts of sand and hard soil and grass and wider fairways and centerline, but all kinds of different concepts that I don't think a lot of people or traveling golfers or love architecture would not be thinking about as much. Did not Pinehurst number two get restored by Coren Crenshaw? So a kind of seminal golf course in modern architecture in that sense. I mean, Coren Crenshaw have done some incredible things other places. And I think if you look at what they have done, that Friar's Head really comes to mind, then you know that they haven't done it just one place, but that it was popularized by Pinehurst number two is very, very important, I think. So great team involved with this. It should be a whole lot of fun. What Doak goes on to say is that the number one thing that most excited him about the project was working with the sand cap. I mean, that's kind of an architect's dream, being able to work with sand cap, because then you can make it really firm. You can work with different types of native grasses. You could do a whole lot of other things in terms of drainage and just build that you really can't do on a clay-based soil like we have here in the Mid-Atlantic region, the DMV. It makes it difficult to drain, makes it difficult to do certain things for a golf course. Well, with sand cap, you can do pretty much anything that you want, and that makes it incredible. It's a great canvas with which to work off of, and should be really exciting. And then go on with the number 10 course, whatever that turns out to be named, because Pinehurst owns even more acreage in Aberdeen than the whatever couple hundred they're using for this. They have something 900 total acres in Aberdeen. They're going to try to develop that more, probably more golf in the future to come. But this is probably the start of whatever the number 10 course becomes. And maybe it becomes its own thing, because if they're thinking about developing several other courses on this plot of land, maybe it becomes its own kind of mini resort. But really, really exciting news for golfers, for golf fans, for traveling golfers for a couple of years from now. One of Doak's architects from Renaissance Design, which is his firm, Brian Schneider, did the design of a place I joined in South Carolina called Old Barnwell that's opening in full later this year, that opened 7 holes in December of 2022. It's really an exciting time. After so many years of golf course closures, and there's still lots of golf course closures, don't get me wrong, and there are net more closures than openings, but it feels like, as I kind of talked about 15 years ago, 10 years ago, that with this wave of closures that we had, each and every new golf course is going to feel even more significant, even bigger of a deal. And that has turned out to be true. Every new golf course gets a lot of attention, a lot of love, and hey, that's cool by me. All right, that's going to do it for us today on Two Out the First. We don't have too much to dig into, so we're not just going to drag on the show forever. This is kind of the neat format of it, that we can get in and get out our stories. Thank you so much for watching or listening, whether you're watching on YouTube, listening to your favorite podcast service. We appreciate it. Please give us a 5-star review if you can do that, or smash a like if you're watching on YouTube, whatever it is. And consider subscribing to the show and to the channel. We'll be back tomorrow with a new episode. We'll have the first round not quite underway at Kapalua, but we'll have some things to talk about related to that, more news conferences that we get for the players and first thoughts from them in 2023. I'm Ryan Balaji saying thank you for listening and watching. We will talk to you tomorrow on 2 of the First.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.